The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, first of all, she's done incredibly well under really, really difficult circumstances. And she's done something else, which is to contrast so dramatically with his doom and gloom, his fear-mongering, his hatred of different kinds of people, the darkness, the divisiveness. She's out there saying, you know what? We're better than this. We can all come together. We can have a better future. And I love that level of joy and enthusiasm to get people thinking again. How do we get our country back on the right track and actually, you know, listen to each other, do some big things and make a difference, right?
We love our country. I love our country. I know we all do. That's why everybody's here right now. We love our country. We take pride in the privilege of being American. And this is a moment where we can and must come together as Americans, understanding we have so much more in common than what separates us. Let's come together with the character that we are so proud of about who we are, which is we are an optimistic people. We are an optimistic people. Americans, by character, are people who have dreams and ambitions and aspirations. We believe in what is possible. We believe in what can be. And we believe in fighting for that. That's how we came into being. Because the people before us understood that one of the greatest expressions for the love of our country, one of the greatest expressions of patriotism, is to fight for the ideals of who we are, which includes freedom to make decisions about your own body, freedom to be safe from gun violence, freedom to have access to the ballot box, freedom to be who you are and just be, to love who you love openly and with pride, freedom to just be.
What?
Oh man, this is it's funny, but it's also a total disaster. What a train wreck this campaign really and truly is. She can't even Oprah looking off to the side to the cameraman, I guess, wondering how much longer is this going to go on? It's unbelievably painful in many ways to watch this as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of the week. Hard to believe. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. If you go to Rumble, give us the thumbs up, please. If you want to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. So, you can see why, like we covered yesterday, there are so few interviews because this, you get to hear about aspirations. You get to think about whatever. It doesn't even make sense. It didn't make sense to Oprah. It didn't make sense to all the Hollywood actors that were on Zoom with this particular event. And then, I mean, the jokes going around social media. When people ask, how are you going to lower prices at the grocery store? Well, I grew up middle class. Well, and then Tim Walz saying the same thing. It's really bad. And they know it. They know it. That's why they're trying to assassinate Donald Trump. Because as I said yesterday, they know they cannot possibly beat him. Yes, it's got to be too big to rig. But you've got counties now in Pennsylvania and others that are just, people are turning to Donald Trump in droves. He, as I said yesterday, he's going to New York. He's going to deep, dark blue New York. I mean, that would be astonishing if he were to win a state that blue. But the fact that he's going with, what, 45 days left until the election? There's just 6 or 7 weeks left. And when she goes out, it's like what you just saw. Listen to this one from, I think she took a question here, and she was talking about inflation, clip four.
We really would love to know what your plan is to help lower the cost of living.
Yeah, first of all, thank you both for being here. And yours is a story I hear around the country as I travel. And in terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams and ambitions for your family and working hard and finding that the American dream is, for this generation and so many recently, far more elusive than it's been. And we need to deal with that.
So how are you going to deal with it? That's what they're asking. The right to have aspirations and dreams? First, let me just thank you for being here. I'm surprised she didn't go into the middle class background. Maybe she did. I didn't listen to the whole of the interview, if you want to call it that. This is from a different moment earlier this week. Listen to clip 20.
You know, I was the first person to be a woman attorney general of California. I was the first woman to be elected district attorney of San Francisco. I was the first person of color to be elected attorney general of California. Whatever. First. Welcome to the Role Model Club. It's tough.
Total silence. Total silence, as I say. It's a disaster. It is. It's hard to believe, and I'm not trying to make fun. Well, we had a little fun, I guess, with the Oprah. What? We blew the dust off that one. That was on the shelf for far too long. You can play that almost every day now. It's hard to believe that this individual is that close to the presidency. I mean, and then you look at the fake president and the disaster that was back on June 27th. I think we played this one earlier. This is where, again, she's explaining how she's going to bring prices down. Just like that couple asked, and it was asked, and there was no answer other than, I appreciate your aspirations and dreams. Clip 24. Do we not have clip 24? Well, we will move on to the Gallup poll. It's not looking so good according to Rasmussen either. He's probably got the most accurate forecasting that's out there. But this is even the favorability rating at Gallup. Nearly identical percentages of U.S. adults rate Donald Trump 46% and Kamala Harris 44% favorably in Gallup's latest. So that's according to Gallup. And, you know, it's not like Trump's is super duper high either, but hers is 44. Trump's favorability rating, it's always been pretty low. But if you compare it even to 2016 and 2020, the favorability for Trump in 2016 was 34. And then in 2020, it's 45. And now it's 46. So you see the trend line. You see the direction. I mean, in 2016, the favorability was low for Trump, and he still won. More favorable than Kamala Harris. Listen to Abby Phillips. I think this is on MSNBC, as she's basically describing the strategy now for the Harris campaign, clip five.
These events are, you know, part of a strategy that the Harris campaign is putting out there, which is to largely avoid doing interviews. They're not necessarily settings that put her, that where she shines. So they're doing this instead. And this was very different for her. Might it work? Will this be enough? I mean, we have, you know, less than 50 days until the next election. So
the answer is it is not enough. It will work. Partly. So let me explain. This is a great event. And it's good for her. And listen, especially with Oprah and an Oprah audience, this is really, really important for Kamala Harris, because Donald Trump has every base voter he's going to get. She does not have every base voter she can get. And she's needs about 10 points more black voters in places like Georgia to be where she needs to be to win these swing states. So these are incredibly important moments for her. They are not enough, though. She still has to sit down and answer questions. I'm not inventing this. I talk to swing state voters all day. And what they're telling me is I'm still undecided because I haven't heard enough from Kamala Harris. They know who Donald Trump is. They don't know enough about Kamala Harris. And they're not here for the soft interviews. They want her to have to answer real questions about the problems they have. This is them in their own words. You don't have to take it from SC Cup. Take it from the voters you need. She needs more interviews. Okay.
So on the one hand, you've got one on the round table saying she shouldn't do any interviews, or this is what the campaign's planning. And then this one's pointing out that she's got to. If she wants to try to win in these swing states, she's got to do more interviews. She's got to take more questions. But then when she does that, you see how it happens. You see how it plays out. Trump, for his part, this was at the Economic Club of New York a couple days ago. Listen to him as he's talking about the economy. And people, again, all across the country are feeling it. And he's right. He's right about it. This is clip 27.
As we gather today, we have an economic disaster on our hands.
Yes.
An economy in crisis, a failing nation, a nation in serious decline. Under the radical policies of my former opponent, Joe Biden, and my new opponent, Kamala Harris, 1.3 million workers have become unemployed in the past 12 months. I don't know if anybody knows that. The typical American family has lost over $28,000 due to rampant and record-setting inflation.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's feeling it. Joe Biden. He's still around, by the way. Joe Biden the other day when he was talking about how his spending is very different than Donald Trump. Listen to clip 25.
The spending we've done, I have to put a hole back there. The spending we've done has not fundamentally increased the deficit like the other guy did. No, seriously.
Our spending doesn't increase the deficit like Trump's did. He actually said that. And so then you get Kamala out there, and you even heard it in the cold open. Hillary's talking about a new path forward. A new path? Doesn't that suggest that the path we're on right now is a disaster? So you see how difficult this position is to hold this position. I'm an extension of Joe Biden. We're proud of it. But also it's going to be a new path forward. We've got a new way forward. We've got all these new ideas. This article, I referenced it yesterday and didn't really have much time to get into it. Well, the one about 44 days to the election and how that they're not taking any interviews, comparing it to J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, obviously, is everywhere, whether it's rallies, interviews, phoning in on shows, just all the time, nonstop. Listen to Donald Trump again as he's talking about some, just breaking down some numbers. Clip 28.
8 years ago, I came before you as a candidate for president and shared my vision to end the stagnation and return to rapid growth. That's what we did. As president, I am very proud to say that we accomplished something that nobody thought that was even possible. Before the pandemic, real median household income rose by $7,684. And even after the pandemic, annual incomes were up $6,400. The average American household saw a $197,000 increase in real net worth in 48 months. For the bottom 50% of households, average wealth more than doubled, increasing by 121%. Lowest income people benefited the most. After 12 years of decline, we added nearly 7 million new homeowners, never happened before. And in 3 years, we created 7 million new jobs, 260% more than projected.
when I took office.
I guess that's what Hillary and Joe Scarborough and others would say is a, you know, his depressing message. But he's just bringing facts. This is the way it was. Here again, I have 4 years experience. I have a track record. You can look at the numbers when I was there before the attack from COVID, before the bioweapon was unleashed, before they used it to steal the election. There's 3 years there, 3+ years of prosperity, growth, yes, spending too. And that's something neither party, by the way, has confronted. $30-some trillion in debt. We're paying $1 trillion a year in the interest payments. Those are back-breaking figures. But leaving that aside, again, both sides are guilty. Both sides, the spending for both sides contributes to the deficit. Never mind what the fake president said. His out-of-control spending is righteous. Okay. And Trump's is not. Trump's is, his is, it's a sinful plan. But ours... Victor Davis Hanson, this piece I mentioned the other day, he says about Kamala, Harris seems unwilling or unable to answer any impromptu question that she has not been previously prepped for. Her answers at the debate were memorized and canned. They never addressed the questions asked. That's what we're seeing. Even when she's asked point blank, she doesn't answer them. Her single 11-minute post-debate Philadelphia interview was a shipwreck of dodging and dissimulating, even though the host was sympathetically left-wing. Remember, the host, Dana Bash, gave her multiple-choice answers. She said, well, now, I'll ask you this, and is it for this reason or this one or this one over here or maybe this one? She was just helping her, throwing softball questions, and it was still a disaster. 11 minutes, and she had to go with Tim Walz. You know the history. It says here, even socialist Bernie Sanders pointed out that for Harris to get elected, she must temporarily disown her lifelong leftist credentials. She's got to lie, in other words, if she's going to sneak her way in. She's got to be willing to lie. And, you know, the dear leader was pretty good at that and sounded fairly eloquent when he was doing so. I'll come to a clip from him in just a second. Listen, though. Listen to Nancy Pelosi. Speaking of lies, listen to Nancy Pelosi talking about Kamala and the primary as she sees it and how it's totally legit. Yeah, she was voted in. Everything was purely Democratic, right? Clip 23.
You had reportedly said you wanted a sort of an open primary if Joe Biden stepped down. Did you change your mind because you saw all the excitement around Kamala Harris?
No, I didn't change my mind. We had an open primary and she won it. Nobody else got in the race.
We had an open primary and she won it. She didn't get one single vote. They installed her. Now, say what you will about the fake president, Biden coming out 30 minutes after he announced he wouldn't run and endorsing Kamala, that may have put the dear leader in a difficult position. They may have wanted someone else. But if they're stuck with her, fine. Either way, it's not democratic. When it ever is put to democracy or a vote, she doesn't get anything. It's dreadful. She's that unlikable. I'm talking about Kamala Harris. Now contrast what you heard right there from Nancy Pelosi with what Rachel Maddow said about Donald Trump and elections, clip 22.
He doesn't like elections. Even when he wins elections, he doesn't like them because he doesn't think that we should choose our leaders that way. He just thinks he should be in charge without elections.
In charge without elections. I mean, the man is flying all over the country, speaking in front of tens of thousands. We showed you the aerial footage yesterday of his rally in New York, people lining up for blocks, 60,000 tickets sent out, an arena that only holds 15,000. He's campaigning. He's trying to win votes. His favorability rating is on the up and up. So they say he hates elections And Kamala, now, Kamala loves them. Okay. They've got it exactly backwards. See how it works? You've even Bernie Sanders says, you know, you've got to be able to set aside your real agenda and lie. You've got to be articulate in your lying and deceit. If you're going to if you're going to fool everyone enough to win enough votes, this is This is the same VDH piece. In addition, Harris has reconstructed her privileged upbringing as a child of two PhDs living in a posh Montreal neighborhood into a struggling middle class Oakland childhood. She's lied about her background, even when she answers with no answer. Let me first start by this. I grew up middle class. It says here, to make that distinction stark, Harris must demonize and bait Trump nonstop and make the country fear him. So she paints Trump as a racist and violent insurrectionist, not a former president whose four-year term saw a superior foreign policy, economy, border, and security than during the Biden-Harris term. Instead, Harris has repeatedly claimed Trump as a dictator and a threat to democracy, as if he had politically weaponized the FBI, CIA, DOJ, or IRS, as had Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Trump as Hitler has become a staple Democrat smear for the past decade. Yeah, and now they're trying to assassinate Hitler, and they're justified. And 28% of Democrats believe that the country would be better off if he were killed, if he were murdered. And another 24%, they need a little more time to think about it. So over 50% of Democrats, over 50%, are at least fine or want to give it some thought. Maybe he should be assassinated. How is the knee-jerk response or action or thought, how is it not immediately? Of course not. Of course we don't want to see him murdered. A lot of people do. Because, well, he's Hitler. He's Hitler. So these guys, they nearly carry it out, Ryan Ruth and Crooks. And then the FBI, as I've covered earlier this week, rushes in to clean up the mess, to clean it all up, to obscure it, and then to stonewall Congress. Listen to Jesse Waters last night on the Ryan Ruth assassin. This is clip 12.
God was watching, because new photos from inside the sniper's nest show just how close of a call this was. If Trump had made it to the sixth green, this would have been Ruth's line of sight. That's an even easier shot than what Thomas Crooks had in Butler. Here's exactly what Ryan Ruth did. Watch this.
This is likely where the suspect parked his car. And he went into the bushes right there. I'm approaching where the suspect went into the bushes. This is the actual site right here.
This is the actual area where the suspect entered the bushes. This is the area, the exact spot where the suspect bag was found with the rifle. View right onto the golf course. There's a flag right there.
He would have been about 30 to 40 yards from the president had Donald Trump come up to the sixth green. Had the guy not been discovered, Ruth, had that Secret Service guy not stumbled upon the rifle almost, just 10 feet away. How is the Secret Service not covering this area? Or just sweeping through about 5 minutes before the president arrives? That's the level of security that Donald Trump, a man that more than half of Democrats feel like, you know what, I've got to give some thought, some consideration to justifying assassination. It's an inside job. In the spirit, as I've said all week, the spirit of hatred, the spirit of murder, it's growing, it's intensifying. This was from Jesse, his show last night as well, clip 13.
Today, an Alaska man was charged for threatening six Supreme Court justices. He donated heavily to Democrats. Guess which six justices he was targeting? He then told them, we need mass assassinations. If you're corrupt, you're corrupt. Now, this comes on the heels of another Democrat who traveled across the country and showed up outside of Kavanaugh's house with a gun and zip ties. Remember him? He was arrested, and we've never heard another word about him. And instead of investigating what's behind these assassination attempts, what's fueling them, how they're being put together, the media is blaming Trump for people wanting to kill him. The left think Trump's more of a threat than armed assassins.
It's really, I mean, it's TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome on steroids. People that are okay now with murder. They know they can't win at the ballot box, so let's shoot him. Let's shoot him. And two guys were prepared to do it. One of them actually did shoot him. This is a real clear politics story on crime. Remember in the debate, David Muir, in all of his smug arrogance, says, now the FBI, Mr. President, tells us that the crime statistics are lower during Kamala Harris, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. This is from RCP. Crime is a major issue in this year's election, yet major media ignored the release of a significant new government report showing a surge in violent crime. The increase in violent crime during the Biden administration is a record increase. I'll say that again. The increase in crime, violent crime, during this administration, illegitimate though it is, crime has skyrocketed. It's a record increase. Chris Wray is lying. The FBI is lying. Even Chris Wray, as we played for you yesterday, his initial response following the July 13 assassination attempt was that President Trump may not have been hit. He may not have been hit by a bullet. That was the FBI director. Says here, the latest data released Thursday from the Department of Justice's National Crime Victimization Survey reveal a sharp increase in violent crime under Bush-Harris compared to when Trump left office. And then it quotes David Muir, who said, no, you know, crime is down. And then, as I covered with you on this program, it's because all of the police departments, including LA and New York, aren't reporting their statistics. So the FBI just counts it as if it's perfect then. It says here, he might also, well, further on, since victims don't report most crimes, the NCVS was set up over 50 years ago to get a measure of total crime. The survey interviews 240,000 people each year. Since 2020, total serious violent crime, that would be rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, the categories that correspond to the FBI's measure of violent crime, has soared. Total violent crime was 55.4% higher in 2023 than when the Biden-Harris administration took office. Rapes were up by 42%, robbery by 63%, and aggravated assault by 55%. You can see why. It's basement candidate 2.0. They have nothing to run. They can't run on this record. And why is it just our RCP covering this? Where's David Muir? Did it make the ABC report the night that it came out? It came out last Thursday. No, they ignore this. They ignore it, and RCP explains why. The news media is trying to protect the Democrats from bad news regarding crime. This is important to many Democrat narratives. Democrats have argued that the flood of illegal aliens can't be causing crime because crime is down. So, listen, let's rush to the defense of the Haitians and tell you just how bad J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are. They're threatening. They're causing bomb threats in Springfield because of the pets, the dogs and the cats. Listen to this, what passes for commentary on MSNBC. I think this was earlier today, clip two.
I am an Ohioan, native Ohioan. I am a son of immigrants, and I'm a passionate eater and cook. And so this sudden, you know, national story about, you know, this kind of dehumanization of immigrants based on what they eat. A couple of things. First of all, in a lot of countries in the world with unstable political systems and high levels of violence, lies about what other people eat is actually crucial to how political violence happens. What is multiracial democracy but flavor?
Insert Oprah's what at the end of that one. The town has been flooded with Haitians, and they're bringing their culture to Springfield. Donald Trump, he announced at the New York rally that he's going to go to Springfield and Aurora, where the Venezuelan gangs have taken over apartment complexes. He actually cares about the people there. I mean, the actual American citizens, that is. I mean, not that there aren't some Haitians that are working hard and trying to get established. But still, how does any city survive this? Just being flooded with illegals. Well, Kamala made them legal. Joe Biden did. With the stroke of a pen. Yeah, that's what they want. That is what they want. Listen to Barack Obama. This is the dear leader. This is not like from 1985 or even 2005. This is from 2009. This is the dear leader as he's just starting out with his first term as president. Clip 15.
I think the American people, they appreciate and believe in immigration, but they can't have a situation where you just have 500,000 people pouring over the border without any kind of mechanism to control it. So we've got to deal with that.
15 years ago, that's it. You can't just have 500,000 pouring across the border without having some kind of mechanism to control it. Well, that's 500,000. There's been something like 10 to 15 million. Donald Trump says 20 million during this illegitimate administration. And they're being recruited. They're being dumped in Springfield. They're being recruited to vote. They just cleaned up the voter rolls here in Oklahoma, one of the reddest states in the union. And they had to clean up something like 450,000 names of individuals, whether they were illegals or dead or no longer lived in the state. I mean, if our voter rolls have that many people on them that aren't, that can't vote, that shouldn't vote, what's it like in some of these other states that won't even clean up the rolls? They can't, because that's voter suppression. So leave the dead people and the illegals on there. That's the way the Clyburn machine wants it. Stacey Abrams, the dear leader, that's how they work. That's how they operate. They can't win without dead people voting. They can't win without illegals voting. So they will cheat, but they're concerned now that it's going to be too big to rig. So they've got to kill him. They've got to kill him. And then if a story emerges out of Springfield, we'll just cover it up with nonsense about food and how it's been debunked. And nobody in the regime cares about just the normal residents of Springfield. Well, Donald Trump does. Or these runaway crime statistics. Says here, the news media won't report the shocking numbers. They know the Democrat narratives would blow up if word gets out that rape, robbery, and aggravated assault rates are 55% higher than they were in 2020. See, the regime tells you, well, now COVID, there was more crime because people were up home. They were at home and they were discontented and on drugs and drinking more alcohol. So they just committed more crime. That was sort of peak level. And that was Trump. That was his final year. That's where it peaked. And then since then, it's just plummeted. And Chris Wray told us so. No, that's a lie. Crime is up. Violent crime is up by 55%. And a lot of it is the migrant crime wave. Certainly some of it. How much, I guess, is anyone's guess. But you see all these reports coming in from all over the country. Another migrant illegal that's raped this girl or done this or committed murder. This is bitter affliction. That's how your Bible describes it. And when Donald Trump describes it, he says we're under attack. Well, we certainly are, aren't we? America is under attack. It's under attack. If you don't have this book, it's been out since 2013. We offer it without cost or obligation. Just call the 800 number on your screen, 1-866-930-3024. Lots and lots to get to, but I'm running out of time. We'll take a quick break and then we'll wrap things up for today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
Do you have full confidence in the Secret Service to protect all of you?
I do.
You feel safe for you and your family?
I do. But, I mean, you can go back to Ohio. Not everybody has Secret Service. And there are far too many people in our country right now who are not feeling safe. I mean, I look at Project 2025, and I look at, you know, like the Don't Say Gay laws coming out of Florida. Members of the LGBTQ community don't feel safe right now. Immigrants or people with an immigrant background don't feel safe right now. Women don't feel safe right now. And so, yes, I feel safe. I have Secret Service protection. But that doesn't change my perspective on the importance of fighting for the safety of everybody in our country.
The Haitians are terrified. They don't have Secret Service protection. And all these other groups, they're terrified. They're terrified of Project 2025. That's what they're afraid of. No, they're afraid of crime. Violent crime statistics. This is from Fox News. As Colorado combats rising gang violence from illegal immigration, six counties are suing the state over a law they say hobbles their ability to tackle migrant crime. Those counties are battling a state law that prohibits local law enforcement from communicating with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The issue is boiling over in the region as at least one Denver suburb is seeing an unprecedented influx of transnational gang activity, and armed migrants were recently seen taking over an apartment complex. So the state law is very friendly to the migrants, the illegals. Local law enforcement, they can't contact the customs and immigration officials. Can't do that. We can't send them home. We can't really punish them. They've got to stay here. And if they want to take over apartment buildings, then let them do it. It says here El Paso, Elbert, Garfield, Mesa, Rio Blanco counties joined Douglas County in a lawsuit against the state and its governor in April. They argue that this law, which prohibits local governments from cooperating with the federal government for immigration enforcement, violates the state constitution. They just want tougher laws so that they can deal with the migrant crime wave. And they ask these other three, they ask, and she had some word salads in that one too. They ask her about Secret Service, and she bizarrely says, Haitians don't have Secret Service detail. That's their takeaway. One of them, Bloomberg, it says here, the backlog of immigration court cases has grown from about 500,000 in 2016 to more than 3.6 million in June. The figure reflects the cases of everyone who's the subject of what's called an immigration removal proceeding, not just those who've applied for asylum because of state persecution. And on it goes. It's just one of many. This is another one from 1819 News. Outspoken left-wing pro-Kamala Democrat Judge David Carpenter allowed Bessemer triple homicide suspect out on bond for separate 2022 shooting. Here comes the liberal judges, happy to let the criminals out on bond, and they go right back to work committing violent crimes. Violent crime right across the country has been up, is up by 55%. Listen to Donald Trump as he explains why he thinks that New York is in play, and largely because of the disaster that is New York City. The migrant crime wave, all the illegals flooding into the city. It's got its other problems and issues as well. The whole state does. That's why he was there in Long Island the other night. This is clip 18.
Told some people in Washington, yeah, I'm going up to New York. We're doing a campaign speech. They said, what do you mean New York? You can't ever. Nobody can win. Republicans can't win. I said, I can win New York, and we can win New York. We're going to win New York. And if you vote for me, I'm going to reduce your taxes, reduce your crime, and reduce your levels of stress. We're going to have a lot of stress. The only thing that I will increase are your incomes and your love for your state will come roaring back again.
Trying to find that column by Lee Zeldin. This is from the New York Post. He's a fellow New Yorker, or he's from New York. I guess Donald Trump would still call himself a New Yorker. It says, we are less than 50 days from the election day. Donald Trump's in New York. Weak, corrupt, incompetent, and inept leaders have passed law after law that have made life less safe and less affordable. And New Yorkers are fed up. They've had enough. New York continues to lead the nation in out-migration because pro-criminal, high-tax, and sanctuary policies have forced countless New Yorkers to seek refuge in other states. Many have reached a breaking point. Further on, he says, he cut Joe Biden's lead to mid-single digits before the Democratic Party enacted their coup to oust the sitting president and leader of their party. A coup. They got rid of Biden, and Trump had already narrowed the lead in New York for Biden to single digits. Zeldin says, make no mistake, New York is a battleground state. Our race for governor earned the most votes for a statewide Republican candidate in over 52 years. 52 years. Is New York actually in play? That would truly be miraculous if Donald Trump somehow, some way, was able to get one of those deep, dark blue states like New York or Virginia. I mean, the swing states are already looking pretty good, except for maybe Wisconsin, which looks like it's neck and neck. But Trump's showing leads in Nevada, in Arizona, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan. There's some saying even Minnesota may be in play. The crime, no doubt. The inflation, the illegal immigration, there's not a lot that they can go out and actually campaign on, Kamala and Walz. And then when they do, listen to them try to answer a simple question. I've talked this week about the spirit behind murder and assassination. John 8 and verse 44 says that Jesus Christ says that the devil, he was a murderer from the beginning. He's behind it, our adversary. He goes about seeking whom he may devour. He's like a roaring lion. I mean, he speaks like an angel of light. We have so much love. We have so much joy. The vibe, Hillary said this week, the vibes that I'm seeing from Kamala, it's just so wonderful. Yeah, well, what about the gangs in Colorado? What about just bombarding a small town with so many illegals that the city can barely function? What about the crime in New York City? What about the cost of living? The rising rent cost, the rising cost for foods. Revelation 13 and verse 8 says that Jesus Christ was the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. They murdered the Son of God. He came to this earth as a light. He came as a light, but it says in John 3 that men love darkness. They love it. So they just blotted him out. The Son of God, God in the flesh. He lived a perfect life. But human nature, I mean, even his own brothers, it took them some time to come around. And they grew up in the same house with him. I'm talking about the brothers of Jesus Christ, James and Jude. It says in John 7 and verse 5 that they didn't believe. Well, they did later in life. And they were embarrassed. It took them so long. And by the time they wrote their epistles, they were true Christians, ready to sacrifice their physical lives if they had to for the cause. Look at the way human nature just naturally rebels against God and His way of love. It's just naturally hostile to the way of give. It just naturally goes in the direction of hatred, even murder. Even murder. There's a verse at the end of Romans 1 that says, look, even if you give your approval to sinful behavior, you're complicit. I mean, you're right there with it, even if you're not actually pulling the trigger. Look at what Jesus said about having hatred in your heart. That's in Matthew chapter 5. We'll look at that in time if we can. Speaking of Jude, let me just give you this verse. Jude 1 and verse 11. This is from that short epistle toward the end of the book of the Bible. It says, woe unto them, for they have gone the way of Cain and ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward and perished in the gainsaying of Korah. They've gone the way of Cain. I mean, this has been the way of man from the very beginning. Cain was the first murderer. He thought he was justified. He was jealous. He was jealous. Abel made him look bad. So he took care of the problem the way that he saw fit. He wanted to get rid of his brother, and he did. He killed him. And God says about our society, we're going that same way. Evil men and seducers wax worse and worse and worse. 2 Timothy 3:13. Look at the whole chapter of 2 Timothy 3 and see God's assessment of our society, of our world. Verse 8 says, likewise, also these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and they speak evil of dignities. Verse 10, this is all in James' epistle. Verse 10 says, but these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally as brute beasts, in those things, they corrupt themselves. That's God saying that we're essentially treating ourselves, treating one another like brute beasts, like animals, acting like animals, operating on instinct. They know, well, yeah, we've got to preserve, or we've got to go and get food any way that we can. That's been mankind's 6,000-year history. All of the thousands and thousands of wars and the millions, hundreds of millions that have been slaughtered. I mean, I'm talking about wars that many would see as legitimate, a nation against a nation, sending your soldiers off. But so many of the cities in Israel are turning into war zones. They have their no-go zones in Britain, in the United States. There's certainly areas you're not going to go in little Israel because of the hostilities, because of the hatred. Matthew 23, notice this. It says, woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. This is Matthew 23, verse 29. It says, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous and say, verse 30, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. I mean, had we lived at that time? I mean, all these people that would actually go after and persecute and even kill prophets of God, we wouldn't have done that. It would be like us saying today, well, I lived back in the 1860s. We wouldn't have gotten swept up into hating Abraham Lincoln or the North or hating the South. And then it led to all this bloodshed. I mean, we're much more righteous today. Listen to how Jesus responded, verse 31. Wherefore you be witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them that killed the prophets. You're of the same family line. Verse 32. Fill you up then the measure of your fathers, you serpents, you generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell? Listen, you may not have pulled the trigger, but you're breaking the spirit of the law because you're harboring so much hate and resentment. Verse 34, it says, wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you shall kill and crucify, and some of them shall you scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city. Verse 35 says, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. You slew them. You slew Abel. You have the same spirit that his brother Cain had. That's what Jude said in his epistle. And of course, as Christ is saying this, they were plotting even then to kill him. I mean, it was John 7, I think it is. It says that Jesus had to avoid certain Jewish cities at that time because they were trying to kill him. They wanted to assassinate him. And eventually they did. Verse 36, verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you that kill the prophets and stone them which are sent unto you, how often would I have gathered your children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens and her wings, and you would not. You just would not repent and turn to me in humble submission. That spirit of murder, that spirit of hatred is so strong in this world today. But thankfully, we can all look forward to the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to this earth and the establishment of God's kingdom, God's government on earth forever. That's all we have time for on today's show. Sorry we didn't have a segment for World Watch this week. We'll come back to that next week. Take 1 week off with that, but we'll be sure to to have World Watch next Friday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.